Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now a preview of President Obama's national security speech scheduled for later today. He's expected to discuss a reduction in drone strikes and a new push to close the prison at Guantanamo Bay. David Sanger is here for this, the New York Times chief Washington correspondent. His book, Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power, is just out in paperback with a new epilogue. Hi, David. Welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be back with you, Brian.
And the Times on the front page today reports that the president will now decide on drone attacks on foreigners in foreign countries using the same standards that he would apply to U.S. citizens. Does that mean standards for who the president puts on his famous kill list?
We guess so. And, you know, the big question is, why did it take so long? Why did it take 4 years into this administration for a constitutional lawyer of a president surrounded by people who had been concerned about the drone strikes when they were running for office in 2008 to come out this hole?
Well, the Constitution only covers U.S. citizens. So maybe it's bigger news that he's going to cover foreigners under those same standards than that he hasn't until now.
Well, this may be less an issue,
especially if they're Al-Qaeda leaders like Iraqi.
Right. This may be less of an issue right now of constitutional legal issues because, as you say, that only does cover American citizens. But more a question of whether the strategy that the president followed in the first term, which in Confront and Conceal I refer to as the light footprint strategy, and it's not my term. It was actually a term used in the White House, that is beginning to run out of gas. Now, what was the strategy? The strategy was that if you were coming in as a president who got elected on the thought that we were going to end this era of big attritional wars where you send 100,000 troops to occupy a country for 6 or 7 years and then you discover, lo and behold, that you've built up a lot of resentments along the way. If that era is over, then you need a way to defend American interests. And the way he ended up doing this was embracing technologies that were low cost, low casualty, and invented in the Bush administration. So what were they? Drones, cyber warfare, described at length in the book in regard to Iran, and the use of special forces, what you saw on the night bin Laden was killed, but that was just one of 14 special forces missions that night. Okay. So those were the big elements. What he's discovered now is that while you could justify every individual drone strike because some briefer would come in and say, Mr. President, this group of people meeting in this living room is getting ready to kill American citizens, if you added all of them up, you ended up making drones the symbol of a new president.
In fact, you write in the book that drone strikes have replaced Iraq and Guantanamo as the chief recruitment talking point for Islamist militants. Is it as powerful a talking point, even when they are specifically targeted strikes that, as you say, they try to justify in every individual case, only against people who they consider combatants?
Well, you know, they are specifically targeted strikes when you hear about them here. When you hear about them on Pakistani television, it comes out quite differently. And I think one of the most interesting things that the president is going to be doing today, and it'll be interesting to see how explicit he is about this, is move the program by and large from the covert side of the CIA over to the Pentagon. Now, what's that allow them to do? If you did a drone strike in Pakistan, any drone strike, and there have been 300 under President Obama's watch compared to 48 in Pakistan under President Bush before him, the ambassador in Pakistan, in Islamabad, the American ambassador, when he saw on Pakistani TV that we were charged with killing civilians, wasn't able to come out and say, well, no, this was a targeted strike. It was aimed at specific terrorists because he couldn't acknowledge that the thing existed at all. Mm. So by moving it over to the Pentagon's world, he'll be at least able to go out and talk about it.
And you – well, there was a stat on NPR today that drone strikes in Pakistan are down 90% already this year.
This year. So they have begun to wind it back.
Which indicates what? That there are a few meaningful targets right now, or because they made a policy decision to back off?
Both. I mean, there are fewer targets, but they've also begun to recognize up through the highest reaches of the military leadership that over time these strikes, while tactically useful, were strategically disastrous.
I was also struck in your new epilogue by the description of the president's concern about how much military operations cost. And the reaction you got to that cost consciousness as historically unprecedented. Is he doing something new here?
He is. You know, the military budget, of the total national security budget of the United States from 9/11 forward nearly doubled in a decade. And I think the president came to the conclusion this was simply unsustainable. I mean, what other part of the U.S. budget could you argue, you know, has a reason to double? Now, there are some things that they're going to continue to spend heavily on and actually spend more on. Drones are still one of them. There are more drone pilots in training by the Air Force right now than there are pilots for manned aircraft. So that tells you what the fleet's going to look like in 2 years' time, because the training isn't, you know, all that long. The second thing they're spending a lot on, cyber warfare. They love to talk about cyber defense. A lot of that money is going to cyber offense. And what I think is interesting about the speech today is that while he's doing drones and he's doing detention, he's not doing cyber. Why is that? Because they don't have any agreement inside the Obama administration about how they would limit the use of cyber
risk. What's the disagreement? What might they want to go after? To what? Crash the Iranian or Chinese military infrastructure electronically or something like that that they can't agree on yet?
Well, what they can't agree on is how would you limit the use of offensive cyber weapons in a, say, a treaty organization or something like that, or in a negotiation with the Chinese, when in fact cyber can be used by so many non-state actors. The nuclear era was an awful era, but when we finally got around to arms control, we knew that the Soviet Union had almost all the other nuclear weapons we were worried about. Okay, so you knew who to sit down and negotiate with. But in cyber, it's very easy for a group that may be vaguely state-supported. So Unit 61398 that we've written about so much in Shanghai, which is a unit of the People's Liberation Army, operates through a group of hackers who call themselves Comment Crew. And when we published in February and just followed up last week with a fairly big story about what it is they were all about, what did the Chinese say? Not our guys.
We're going to run out of time soon. Two things quick. What will we hear today about Gitmo?
I think you will hear the president's renewed commitment to close it. The question is, how much of this could he do by executive order and executive action? And right now, I don't think he's prepared to take the political hit that it would take to just move those remaining detainees by himself.
He could do that by himself? He doesn't need Congress?
There is some argument that under his commander-in-chief powers, he could move detainees any place he wanted to be. Now, many in Congress would argue that the legislation that they've passed since would explicitly prohibit that. I think it's a question that the president may not want to get into that argument, given everything else he's arguing with Congress on right now.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times. His book, Confront and Conceal, now out in paperback with a new epilogue. And before you go, a word about leaks and the press. We now know the Obama Justice Department was looking at AP reporters' phone records to see if they had clues to who leaked word of a failed terror plot in Yemen. And they went so far as to call a Fox News reporter a co-conspirator in illegally leaking classified information about North Korea because he received that information. And yet you and other reporters also seem to receive leaks from the White House when they want to get certain kinds of security information out. The story in the Times today about the new drone policy sources it as from, quote, classified policy guidance signed by Mr. Obama, unquote, which sounds like a leak of classified information. You can correct me if it isn't. But do they have a fundamental hypocrisy problem when it comes to leaks?
You know, every administration has a fundamental hypocrisy problem when it comes to leaks. Now, turning something out a day ahead of the president's speech is something every administration has done, probably back to George Washington. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere somebody got, you know, briefed on his farewell, on the Washington farewell address.
Though I don't know if it doesn't go further than what he's actually going to say to the public.
I don't know that either, and we'll know that when we see it. Look, we've all been subject, any of us who work in this territory, to leak investigations. You can't work in the world of reporting on national security issues, on Iran and on North Korea and on drones and on Pakistan without going into a territory that someplace is classified. And I understand why the government is trying to crack down on leaks. My concern is twofold. First of all, you don't want to get in the position of criminalizing reporting. And so in the Rosen case, what you saw was an effort, not a very serious one, but an effort, it seemed, to argue that he was an accessory to this by interviewing people who had access to classified information. Well, if that was the case, you're going to take every national security reporter in Washington and might as well just lock them up,
no
because
kidding.
Everybody we talked to has got access to classified data. The second thing I worry about, and this came up a lot in my reporting for Confront and Conceal and elsewhere, is that once you've done your reporting, if you're a responsible reporter on these things, you want to make sure you have a channel for going back to the government and saying, look, I'm reporting on this classified operation. If there is something here that is truly vital to preserving someone's life, a continuing operation, and so forth, we have to have that conversation before it's published. Okay? And over the years, over many administrations, Democratic and Republican, I've managed to have those conversations at very senior levels. If this current atmosphere continues, I fear that the government itself is going to worry about having that conversation. And if you close off that channel, sooner or later, some big mistake is going to be made where a news organization is going to go ahead and publish something that probably should be published, but with a detail that they might have been able to keep out that could keep somebody alive.
So you're saying that leaks serve the interest of security, not just the interest of public information?
They can at times, but they certainly serve the purpose of keeping the American public debating big issues. The president wouldn't be coming out today talking about drone policy if years of reporting by my colleagues and others didn't force him to go off and give that speech. And, you know, the reporting that we did about the Iranian cyber case, you know, started a debate in this country that was long overdue on the question of whether or not you want the United States using offensive cyber weapons.
We will be carrying the president's national security address this afternoon, by the way, currently scheduled for 2 o'clock on WNYC AM and WNYC.org. One correction from something I said during our conversation, Anwar al-Awlaki was a U.S. citizen.
He was
I think
a US
I
citizen.
Put him in a group of people who weren't. But David Sanger, New York Times chief Washington correspondent, his book, Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power, just out in paperback with a new epilogue. Thank you so much.
Great to be here with you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we continue our series, Legal Weed, on implementing legal marijuana. Today, pot economics and what makes a legal or black market price. Stay with us.